IML, the International Mr. Leather Contest and Conference, just wrapped up in Chicago, where thousands of kinky folks gathered to build community, celebrate sexual diversity, and to choose the new Mr. International Leather 2019, Jack Thompson, the first trans man of color to win the title.
Today, puppeteer, massage therapist, and internal family systems practitioner Mark Saltzman joins us to chat about IML and continue our conversation about Velvet Rage, Alan Down's seminal book for overcoming the pain of growing up gay in a straight man's world.
Listen as we chat with Mark about living your authentic self and understanding the shortfalls in the book Velvet Rage.
Plus, James Baldwin's critique on gay liberation and rage.
And yo, MTV Raps! Why is a Chicago gay bar banning rap music? Did anyone tell them that Cardi B is the biggest star? I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Yeah, that's a card that one of our listeners, Rita, sent to me. It's Mr. Rogers with King Friday. It's not just a puppet, it's a card, and I have it here next to my desk to remind me every day why I do this podcast.
He was an amazing man.
And part of it is just to tell people who you are is good enough, and you make every day special just by being yourself.
Mm-hmm. I love you just the way you are.
You do not need to do anything special to be worthy and deserving of love. It's a hard concept to wrap your head around.
It's a journey that everybody goes on their own, and it's lifelong. I think I'm still on it. I've read so many self-help books, and I'm still on that journey of learning to love myself.
Yeah, and part of it is that, you know, I think, like, when my mom and my dad went through a divorce, my mother bought, like, 50 self-help books, and she read the first three chapters, and then she's like, okay, I got the idea.
I get it.
And my brother actually was like, always down. Challenging her, and said, it's like, Mom, why don't you finish reading the book before you start giving other people advice on it?
I have a friend, the only books that my friend reads are self-help books. I'm like, you don't read novels, you don't read biographies? Like, no, just self-help books. I'm just like, wow.
Oh, guilty.
And he reads a lot, so.
On today's show, we're going to be talking again about Velvet Rage, Alan Down's landmark book about overcoming the pain of growing up gay in the straight world. Joining us today is psychologist, right? You're a internal family systems practitioner.
There you go.
Mark Saltzman, massage therapist, puppeteer, kink fetishist practitioner,
enthusiast,
to take a look about loving yourself and understanding who you are and seeking out that process. But before we get into that, International Mr. Leather just wrapped up here in Chicago.
A lot of fun.
The world's largest expo of people who are into sadomasochism, to leather, to all kinds of kink and fetishes, and it's not just gay men, but there are a lot of trans people, a lot of cisgender and trans women attend this conference as well.
I wouldn't say it's the largest kink festival.
It is called, yes.
Okay, I'm sure the leather festival, but...
It is considered the largest gathering by attendance.
Okay.
And you can argue it, of course, someone will find some, you know, they're like, excuse me, Fausto, but there was... And listen, I'm just reading the press release here. Go, you know... If you want to say Dory Alley is bigger, go for it.
How many millions of dollars does that bring in every weekend?
Dory Alley or
no,
IML?
IML.
I saw the number.
Yeah, it was in the millions.
Was it recently?
For a weekend, just the Thursday through Monday.
That's how much money they brought in? Well, that's good, because I saw something from a few, I don't know how long ago, but it was some kind of tax return, and it was like half a million.
That's crazy.
But you know, I think that now the prices are a lot more expensive, and you know, everything costs more money. But you know, it goes to a good organization. It goes to the Leather Archives Museum, and you know, museums are not a cheap place to run.
No.
So, you know, if their budget's only $1 million a year, they might be sweating it.
You're talking about IML. Mark's talking about Doriolo.
Oh, you are? No, I was talking about IML.
Okay, IML. To clarify that.
Yep.
And so, you know, we grew up in Chicago. We came of age. We've seen IML every single year. It's quite a delight to see people. I think in the past, it was more of a shock to see guys in, you know, cowboy outfits, dress up as cops, with their chaps, with their butts hanging out, walking around downtown Chicago with a harness and a chain on someone's neck and a, you know, a mask on their heads. And the tourists are like, oh, my God, homosexuality. Oh, my lords, my stars. And so. But now we live in a world where that stuff is, you know, more commonplace. We'll have more exposure to that, even through television shows, 50 Shades of Grey, sort of mainstream sadomasochism for, you know, soccer moms. And Kelly, may I speak to the manager in the suburbs? And now we, we're sort of a coming of age. And, you know, I think that, like, International Mr. Leather is sort of evolving into something new, and we're in the process of seeing that
again. I saw a lot of diversity this year. There were so many different people, so many different, you know, the superheroes, the puppies, the just the different
adult babies.
Adult babies, which is amazing.
One group you did not see, though, this year was drag queens. Because
I did not see a drag queen.
There weren't very many drag queens. No. I think I saw like maybe one, because a lot of them went to a RuPaul's Drag Con this weekend. So it was it was interesting to see, because you always see, you know, your favorite drag queens there, but now they're just like, oh, I'm just going to go out to the con out in L.A.
I noticed it was a lot more peaceful this weekend. Just kidding. But there, you know, there was no line for waiting 3 hours to meet somebody and paying $80 to do that. Would you think they could get away with that? Like, if a porn star, or like who would be the most famous sadomasochistic bondage personality that could charge $80 and have teenage girls and their parents waiting in line
to get their autograph? Or
it's a different animal, but it's interesting how this diversity is starting to manifest itself, where we're starting to see, like, you know, the drag phenomena have its own expo, as opposed to being a subset of what IML used to be.
Yeah, they're just paying $300 to get in the room.
It's expensive, you know, whereas IML still is cost money to get into as well, right?
Yeah, it was. They had I think a lot of people were upset about the charges to get into the hotel and then to get into the Leather Mart. So there was $10 to get in, and then $40 to go to the, just to go shopping. So $50 right there you had to drop just to walk in the door.
And every year this question gets asked to me, and I hear other people asking those questions. Did you get the sex that you were wanting or seeking on Memorial Day weekend? And my answer is, I don't expect anything when I'm stuck in a car in a traffic jam, except I want to get out of the traffic jam. So because I can't change the surroundings, I just have to enjoy what is in front of me and accept it for what it is.
Just let it wash over you, is what you're saying?
Well, and
all that jizz.
Traffic jam, you know, because there's so many people. It's a clusterfuck. And so there's always going to be somebody hotter, younger, older, you know, whatever it is that person's seeking in front of you and behind you on the stairs. And so part of it is, like, I do notice that, like, even making a conversation with somebody, it's hard to even maintain eye contact.
Well, I'm there to volunteer for a wonderful organization, and I that's my main goal while
I'm
there.
What's the organization?
Yeah. It is Mr. Friendly, Dave Watt. He started this amazing program to lessen the stigma of HIV and to talk about the medicine PrEP, Truvada. And if you're HIV positive, stand your medicine, and just educating people what HIV positive undetectable means. And Dave helped me get on Truvada 12 years ago, and it's just been an amazing program. He'll go into high risk areas where they're having risky sexual behavior and bring a nurse and do full STD testing for free.
And be like, you're out.
What happens if, like, somebody does test positive for something?
Well, we give them a counselor right away, and we ask those questions before we start. If you test positive today, how are you going to react? Mm-hmm. What kind of help do you need?
Mm-hmm. Did you bring a gun with you?
And we walk them over to the testing facility, and Howard Brown was there, and the health department was there, and they did, I don't know how many tests they did, and gave away so many condoms and lube, and...
Well, it's important, especially at these kinds of events, because, like, you know, when you have a bunch of people coming together and they're all having sex, things are going to get spread around. Even Coachella, there's a rise of STDs in the neighborhood.
Right. STIs.
STIs, yeah. Yep.
Why are we calling it eyes and not D's?
Infections, not diseases.
Why is gonorrhea not a disease?
Because it's an infection. Disease is like a chronic kind of condition. It's something you catch and like you just have.
So HIV is an infection. Mm-hmm. AIDS is a disease.
Perfect.
Yeah. It's the manifest, the chronic condition of it.
Yeah. So when I'm doing that, I'm not, you know, seeking sex. Sex is easy, you know, for most people. If you can't find it, you can do it yourself. I can get myself off a lot better than most people.
People have expectations.
They do. You know? But I go into those events not having any kind of that. And usually I usually have one great.
So you're standing the bar low?
Oh, well, why not?
Mm-hmm. Why not? I do love a low bar.
There's people that are like, they've hooked up with 20, 30 guys over the weekend. That kind of stuff is just like, I'm lucky if I have sex once with my husband.
Some men like a challenge. I do not.
Yeah, I only had sex one time. It was with four people, but it was. Yeah.
I have to say the most joyful and happy memory of this weekend for me was meeting the adult baby diaper lovers. ABDL. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our understanding of adult babies, it usually comes from pop culture. So you see, like, you know, a guy who looks like Boss Hogg from The Dukes of Hazzard wearing a diaper and be like, "Gaga, goo goo, I got poo poo in my pants. I need a nanny to change it."
Are you a drinker or a stinker?
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Yeah. Do you like to poop in your diapers, or do you like to, breastfeed? Mm-hmm. And these weren't anything but that. No. It was a lot of people who are sort of trying to reclaim the happy memories of their youth by turning the dial down to zero.
And they seemed young, right? I'd say most of them seemed to be in their 20s.
They swung towards, they were not recently babies themselves.
Exactly. Because what I've pictured like before, like the picture of infantilism of people who are into it is like a 50 or 60 year old heavy set guy.
Infantilism is such an ugly word. It sounds like you're murdering babies.
That's infanticide.
I like how they're sort of, you know, packaged or rethought about their interest, their kink. It's adult babies who enjoy wearing diapers.
Right. Well, and I think part of it is submission, right? Because they want to,
what they said, it was about losing yourself in the happy memories of childhood.
That's beautiful.
And that's all, you know, it was like the Nexus on Star Trek. It's about wrapping up in that innocence, whether it's real or imagined, of your first birthday party where everybody loved you and you got a cake and you got to smash your hands in the cake and mommy and daddy, you know, thought you were the joy of the world.
I wonder how much of it though too is kind of like tampering down their gender expression too, because like a baby is just, you know, you
absolutely I think there's something about gender neutrality.
You don't really see, like, there's not a hump there. It kind of removes that from the situation, right?
But like most people who are successful in their fetishes, they have a great sense of humor. So they have a big pile of candy there, and I just went to them and was like, I'm gonna steal candy from a baby.
What did they do?
They started crying.
No. But they were totally like playing with it. And so one of them had given me a Kit Kat bar, and then she took it away from me. And I was like, give it back, baby. Bad baby.
And they were sitting around coloring. It was really sweet.
They were wonderful.
There's an element of playing a character in this and really feeling those feelings from childhood. I mean, who doesn't want to be held by their dad again? And, you know, and their mom. And
well, the other thing about IML that I really enjoy is going up to porn stars who most people are terrified of. Mm-hmm. And they're bored to tears. And everyone's like, oh, I masturbated to your porn. It was really hot. Oh, good. You know, I go up to them and I just go, will you, I'm very famous. Would you like to take a photo with me and pretend like you're hot for me instead? And I got these great photos with these porn stars. And then I share them on social media and people are like, how did you get, you know, Hugh Downs to be so hot for you? Hugh Downs, by the way, is a newscaster, not a porn star.
Not a porn star.
Google Hugh Downs.
Hugh
so you know.
Benz Downs.
Hugh Downs should be a porn star name, but.
Hugh Benz over.
And I just loved, I'm like a kid in a candy store, because to me it's like that interaction, that playful mix of fetish and kink play and human interaction, that to me makes my heart sing.
Yeah, and the humor.
Yes.
It's really fun. There are a few people who take it very seriously.
And those are not my people.
And it's hard to, like, and if you break any of their leather rules, you'll hear about it. Like, like the winner.
So what happened? So International Mr. Leather is also a contest, not just a conference.
It's a contest. I did not go to the contest this time.
And the point isn't really who wins. It's to build community.
Right.
But in order, just like RuPaul's Drag Race, in order to get people excited about it, they have a contest.
Right.
And so they're inviting how many? Hundreds of
people. There was 60 some people that were contestants this time. Like, I don't know a lot about
people.
It. A gazillion beautiful people. And I won a leather contest. So I've done this three times.
What'd you win?
I won Mr. Camp at Leather 2016.
Okay.
Okay.
And then
that's a camp resort for gay men.
In Michigan. Uh-huh. And then I Icon Leather in Detroit. I was first runner up.
And that's like a voguing hall or something?
It's another kind of, there's these different smaller groups, mm-hmm. and they have their leather contests. Then you go to like the state level. So then I was in Mr. Michigan Leather, mm-hmm. which I didn't win. But to get on that stage and wear chaps and let your ass hang out and give a speech, it's one of the hardest things. I mean, I've been on the stage since I was 12, and walking up there and doing that and watching these people and trying to, you know, share me with them. It was really difficult. That moment was, it was one of the most rewarding things I've ever done. Mm. So now these gentlemen who go and trans people who went and did this one, you get on that darn stage with all those other men, and I watched all the tears and all the people coming up and seeing Dave mm-hmm. Watt. Dave Watt's been big in the leather community mm-hmm. for a long time. So a lot of the contestants came to say hi to him and get pictures with him.
Dave Watt was the trans...
Mr. Friendly. Dave Watt's
the guy who organizes Mr. Friendly.
Yeah, yeah. The guy I volunteer for.
And this pageant, they don't like me calling it pageant. Like that. Contest.
No. Leather contest.
Yes.
What is the criteria that they're actually judging one? Like, who's the sluttiest one? Who is the most masculine?
That is such a good question, because I did it three times, and the questions they asked you, they're trying to get to know who you are in 20 minutes.
Sure.
And so you have a judging before, and then you get on stage and you have they ask you two questions, mm-hmm. and then the top 20 get to give their speeches. Mm-hmm. So there's just this little tiny amount of time for these judges to get to know who you are.
Mm. I think this year may have changed the contest. I think that they don't ask questions from you. You give some kind of speech or something. That's what I heard.
Pecs and personality. They ask you one question.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I don't know all the contests that they ask, but are what the criteria is. But one of the criteria is toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
And so they judge you on that.
How toxic you can be, or how toxic you're not.
How toxic you are.
Oh.
And so it's a negative score. So the person that won this year, Jack Thompson, who's a biracial transgender person, a man. I scored zero on the toxic masculinity scale.
Wow.
That's probably what pushed him over the edge.
And I think they're looking for someone who can, you know, take this brand mm-hmm. and take it around the world. Are you able to drop whatever you're doing for your job to go to Israel, mm-hmm. to go to Israel, Mr. Leather?
Mm-hmm.
They're really looking for someone who can do that as well at this level.
Because when you win a contest like this, is you have to go to the other places and you have to represent.
Sure.
So you probably have to hit up Europe, like the Middle East,
Belgium,
or whatever, other places. Yeah.
Yeah. Lots.
And so I imagine that there's limitations mm-hmm. to people who can afford to.
Exactly.
Be in
and mm-hmm. I think that's part of the questioning.
Like, how much money you got?
Right.
Well, they have parties and bars, and they collect
fundraisers.
Lots
of fundraisers. Right.
And so you back a contestant, you better, you know, and they win, you got to back them during their reign too, right?
Right. Right.
Oh wow.
So I go to a lot of.
I should get into this leather racket. Where's the chaps? I'll put it on. You want me to travel to where? To Istanbul? They say if you have one Istanbulian as a friend, you don't need no enemies.
I have some chaps in the car if you want to put those on.
Oh, let's do it.
Let's do it, baby. Yeah.
But yeah. So there was some controversy because of the contestant. There were some people in the leather community who feel as though you have to have a penis to when Mr.
There was a gentleman. I do not know his name, but he took a lot of hits. Mm-hmm. He posted something on his Twitter feed, which really
protesting.
Something was on Facebook too. So right. Maybe it's more than just one person.
Oh, a lot of people went after him, and he was actually removed. He was a president of the organization, and he was removed.
Oh, the Tampa guy.
Yeah,
girls, that a shakedown on leadership.
Because I mean, the beauty of IML is there. I mean, there's all the different colors in the rainbow. We're all into something. And why tear each other down? And that just kind of segues right into the Velvet Rage.
Well, part of it is like, part of it is, I think, when you're dealing with people who are struggling with understanding what it means to be a man and creating a contest that sort of celebrates to some degree masculine sexuality. It is challenging for some people who have not been brought forward in time to the current day in our understanding of what those things are.
Right.
And, you know, I want to create a world where instead of sort of shaming or ridiculing these individuals, that we create a space for them to grow.
And well, that's what the leather community is. It's supposed to be a place for them to grow.
That's what it's supposed to be. Exactly.
And sometimes, like, listen, it's like part of your growth is being asked to be stepped down from an organization.
Right.
Because, you know, you need that time out.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes like, mistakes are great lessons.
And it's a great lesson. And this person may be a trans person's greatest ally in the future. You never know. You always have to give people
a chance. And we've all said things and went, okay, what the hell was I thinking? Mm-hmm. We've all
done it. Well, you remember when HRC was one of the biggest antagonists to trans inclusivity in our political space, where Joel Solomonese, the president of HRC, notoriously said that in order to pass a gay and lesbian workplace protection, we had to exclude trans people from that.
Fought for that.
He fought, that, and it was a huge mistake. Mm-hmm. And I would argue that today HRC and probably Joe Solomonese, I'd like to think, are one of the biggest trans advocates and understand that mistake that they made.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I would like to see, you know, that problem stems from the fact that we don't have trans representation and diversity in the organization itself.
Because
and
so we've treated those people so poorly for so long.
As you've seen in Pose, honey. Yeah. Season 2 coming on Netflix, honey. You got to buy it on iTunes or watch FX
or something. FX, yeah. So if you have a cable subscription or something like that that has FX, it might work, but I don't know.
Honey, and we are just loving it. Category is...
Billy Porter.
Billy Porter is a star. Dominique Jackson. Honey, my girlfriend, Angelica Ross.
Why isn't she a bit on the show?
We're working on it.
We're working on it.
Yeah, believe me, I'm.
I'll talk to any of them. Even
knocking on the door.
Even Cubby, who's had like 2 lines.
Hey guys, this is my line, and I'm going to say it. I'm going to deliver it. Yo, what's up?
She got paid.
I'm loving the show. I have to say, it's great to see excellent writing, excellent acting. Great lighting,
costumes.
Mm-hmm. You know, I just have a huge pet peeve when I see African American actors poorly lit or poorly filmed
or makeup
or bad makeup. And it's just makeup, like, and they're sparing no expense and making these people look fantastic and, you know, capturing the struggle, this gritty underbelly of New York City in the 1980s. And making us really feel it, you know, bring a box of Kleenex if you haven't, not to masturbate, but to cry, you know, it's like, because it's really a wonderful series.
It is.
I'm so excited about season 2.
What's going to happen?
Well, it's season 2 is rumored to take place about 5 years into the future.
No, not that far.
And Madonna's Vogue has become a hit sensation and it's impacting the community, not necessarily in a good way.
No.
And there may be a Willy Ninja character that may be coming forward. And there's rumors that Madonna herself will be playing her 19-year-old self on the series. Oh,
well, she
dear.
Will be 19.
Well, maybe they'll do some CGI.
And
they'll,
you know? That's going to be really Come painful. On.
Just like they made Princess Leia look younger. They could do it.
It's going to be a CGI Madonna.
I love it.
It'd be the best.
I love it.
Come on. Boy, let's dance.
Vogue.
I don't know how that's going to look like, but I'm there to watch.
I'm ready. Probably just going to be sitting around watching that MTV ball, you know, the Vogue ball. What year did that come out? And yeah, you know, probably be cursing her out and be like, she's stealing our stuff.
She stole my look, Madonna. Mm-hmm. Forget Linda Evangelista. It's my house of Madonna now because she stole my look.
I bet you the boyfriend, the untrained dancer is going to get spotted by Madonna and he's going to dance for her and the other one's going to be so jealous.
That's right.
Yes, it's going to become and like all about Eve.
Be on tour with her.
Yeah, he's going to be like, ooh, and he's going to be in the video and all that shit. He's going to be like, I'm the one who introduced you to all that stuff.
What I love so much about Pose is the way that they're telling new stories about ideas and people and heartache that we are so familiar with. And in some ways, you know, that velvet rage of not being embraced or understood or appreciated in your own community is really, in your own family, is something that that show does really beautiful at celebrating and making entertaining. I mean, Dominique Jackson's just spitting vicious acid. Yeah, her viciousness is delightful, delectable.
It was so painful to watch the episode where the two women were in the bar,
yes,
and the gay men kicked them out and actually manhandled them and pushed them down. And
that's real.
And that's real. And I mean, it hurt me.
And it doesn't
hurt my heart.
When we first started doing this podcast, probably 2006, 2007, I'm at Hydrate, local bar here in Chicago. And I run into a listener. I didn't know him, a listener of the podcast. He goes, oh, I love the podcast. We're sitting having a drink. He goes, I'll be right back. And then he goes to the bathroom, comes back, and he's wearing fishnet stockings.
Lovely.
He tanked off his panties or something like that. And so, you know, I'm, of course, enthralled because I'm just like, here he is. And so he kind of like lifts his leg up in the air. And I'm kind of like, you know, doing the whole Joan Crawford thing where you
caress
the
bottom,
caressing her thigh and her leg and stuff that's on this fishnet stocking. And some bouncer like walks by. He's like, cut it out or I'll throw you guys out of here. And I'm thinking to myself, like, what kind of bullshit?
What year was this?
This is like 2007, 2008. Jeez. And I'm thinking, like, what kind of, like, bullshit? I'm in a gay bar and I can't do that?
Because if it was a straight dude touching his girlfriend,
you know?
Oh, so that would be okay.
Probably.
That's what.
And that's why I appreciate all these trans people and gender nonconformists. Sometimes, you know, that call out culture on social media is almost like a rattling the war. The drums, you know, don't fuck with our community or we're coming after you.
Well, I think it's about time. It's just about time we start talking about our trans people and accepting them because, I mean, we're one of the biggest bullied societies and we're still doing it to each other.
Yeah.
And why, you know, goes, you know, for me, I can see the Velvet Rage, how it falls into this because I'm the biggest bully of my life is me. I've said more things, worse things to myself.
Like what?
Than other people. Nobody likes me. You're fat. You don't fit in. No, I'm never going to find love. Mm. You know, I think a lot of people have, we all hit these small places of vulnerability at some parts of our life.
And you're a tall, muscular, white man with a college education, with the ability to move around the country at his will.
I was standing in the middle of IML around all those beautiful men dressed like a Boy Scout. And again, I got that wave of a part of my brain that said, who do you think you are? You know, why are you here? You know, it's just this.
What makes you so special?
What makes you special? You know, you're just looking for, you know, just the negativity that's in our brain. It's always there. And I think we all have a way of coping with it. But
Mark, not Mark Saltzman, Mark Felian. Sorry, there's two Marks here. Do you feel that sometimes you're in a space or location where you feel like you don't belong?
Always.
How about even right now?
No, not right now. Yeah. But there's times that you always, you know, you're someplace, you're like, oh my God, I don't belong here, I don't belong here. And then I just have to remember, like, listen, I'm just like everybody else. You know, there's really not that much special about me. These people are probably all feeling the same thing.
Exactly. They all are feeling the same way. And I think that's what I love about the puppy culture at IML. They can wear a mask. They can put the hood on. And sometimes putting the leather on is like it's like an armor. And with drag queens, it's putting the makeup on. It's a way of expressing ourselves a little more and a little more and really starting to remove that negativity and just loving exactly who you are fully.
I don't know. For me, I've never had the privilege of fitting in anywhere. So to me, I'm just like, I know I'm not fitting in. I know I don't belong here, and that's okay.
But you do.
Because I can, you know, in some ways I do, but in some ways I am an outsider in my hometown of San Juan, Puerto Rico, here in Chicago. Mm-hmm. You know, when white gay people find out that I'm Latino, they get mad because they're mad that I pass, and they can't use their racism against me.
I was angry.
You were. You know, and this is like a thing.
I testify. I witnessed.
You've watched this.
Yeah, people.
Wow.
People, this is a common thing.
It's ridiculous. A common thing. And it's like you can just look at the look on their face. It just completely changes.
But I have a huge privilege and a gift that I've used to hopefully make the world a more a place for justice and compassion and equality. But I make no pretense that I feel like I belong anywhere, and anytime that I've been celebrated or given an award or something, there's part of me in my mind going, I snuck one past you bozos. And I get that from my father. My father was somebody who was rejected by my mother's family. Okay. Cute, horribly racist family.
And did he teach you
to be a rebel?
To be a rebel, okay.
And to, you know, watch your back, honey, because the police have guns and they do not waste time shooting down who gives them a dirty look.
And I think there's a lot of people who they don't have that parental figure or a mentor who teaches them that skill. And along the way, you have to pick that up somewhere.
Well, and part of me is like, you know, it's also my culture. It's also my heritage. It's the best parts of things that I've been given.
Yeah.
Like Uzo Aduba did this wonderful TED talk about her name. And when I was 10 years old, I wanted to change my name from Fausto Fernos. That's a hard name for white people, Anglos, to wrap their head around. They're like, what kind of crazy universe do you live in? Stage name. You know, I work in customer service, and 200 times in a day, I have to explain my name to them. You know, to people who are just like, oh my God, the brains are frying. And part of it is like, this is the gift. This is one of the greatest things that my mother could have given me is this name.
A special name. Yeah.
Yeah. And to me, it's a reminder. Fausto means to be fortunate against Satan and God themselves. Mm-hmm. That's what that name means. When the whole universe is stacked against you, you'll still come out on top. Or the bottom.
Or versatile.
Yeah. And that's, to me, you know, what I'd like to do with the show is sort of analyze what is the way that we can understand who we are outside of a capitalistic structure of shopping and fucking. It's about understanding your passions, your desires. So no matter what it is that you're doing in life, when you're waking up the next day, you are thrilled to get to work because it's aligning with who you are as an individual.
Well, what I did from The Velvet Rage, once I understood there was points of that book that really spoke to me, and that led to so many other self-help books. And from that, when you're talking about self, who is that aspect of self, or what is it? And so I usually say, the way I explain it, we've all been to a funeral. If you haven't, and if you've had to see somebody in a casket, there's something that's uniquely missing from that person, just energy. And if you break it down to what we really are, it's just energy.
Yeah, Mark, they're dead.
It is.
I see a lack of energy.
There's a lack of energy.
She doesn't have a lack of energy. She's just luxuriating.
Even if you're atheistic or religious, whichever one, there is there's an aspect of that person in the casket that is missing. Mm-hmm. That aspect of energy is in us three right now, right? Mm-hmm. Have you honored that energy? Right. Whatever it is, whatever you want to call it, soul, spirit, Shakti, Yahweh, Jesus place, whatever. But that energy is really the only thing about us that has always been the same.
Or in Star Trek, Veta Vore.
Okay.
In the search for God. Or is it the search for
Spock?
Spock. No, yeah. The episode where Spock's brother takes all the... where they go into the center of the universe.
Voyage, the what?
The ultimate voyage.
What?
Or is it the Force in Star Wars?
No. Force in Star Wars. The Force in Star Wars is full of bullshit.
The final frontier?
The final frontier.
You are such a Star Trek lover.
That character, Spock's brother, was played by the only survivor of Boys in the Band.
Yeah.
The film. The stage production.
From that aspect of that theory of energy.
Yes.
Then I look at the bullshit in my head. I'm not good enough. I'm not attractive. People don't like me. Where did those stories come from? And so I slowly, kind of methodically looked at those things. And when did it happen? and I started to understand my bullshit. And from that, I started...
By bullshit, you meaning your deception.
Right.
Well, that you believed in.
The just that little negative, the self-critic that's in your head, that's telling you you're not good enough. I'm not this. I mean, how many times... I mean, look at you guys, your beautiful freaking arms. How many times have you said...
You want to squeeze it?
Yes,
go
I
ahead.
Want to touch it. Oh, my God.
Touch the skin, honey.
Oh, so bad.
Touch the skin. Touch the skin all over.
How many times have you said you're not
good enough? You can have this, honey, because you are an overgrown orangutan. Tang.
How many times have you seen those guys in the gyms and or the selfies and they still don't think they're big enough? That aspect. That
I don't think
critic.
I'm big enough, but you know,
I'm definitely not big enough.
Baby, right. I'm just, you know, listen, I'm just glad that I can get out of bed sometimes.
So I try to notice my negativity quickly. Mm-hmm. I acknowledge it. And then I try to work with it in that moment. And to not perpetuate it. That's what I'm trying to do with my life. And it's kept me a lot.
We're talking about you though, and you work with other people.
Right.
How, and this is a struggle that I have both in every job that I face is, and part of it is like, we live in a capitalistic society and I read like business blogs, you know, and there's this selfishness epidemic that corporations and businesses that work with large groups of people have a really hard time of getting people to sort of find themselves validated human beings and want to be invested in their jobs, not because they're being paid, but because to do a good job for the pleasure of the work itself. And that's a terrible, difficult thing that we live in a society that doesn't give people healthcare, that you have to, you know, go into servitude and into debt just to get a modest education.
Right. So that's why I pull everything back to this. Like, you just spoke of a bunch of different people right there.
Yeah.
I can only work on this. I can only work on me.
But you're in a position where you have to give leadership to other people.
Right.
And give, consultation to other individuals. How do we cultivate a self-love, an understanding, a passion for pursuing your interests and aligning those with your job to make people happier and more self-actualized?
There's a part of you. Mm-hmm. There's a part of me that doesn't like me. There's a part of me that loves me. And they're kind of this angel demon, you know, whatever you want to call it. There's a part of you that wants to shop. There's a part of you that wants to get bigger. So I kind of look at it as a hotel. There's 51 floors in my hotel today. On each floor, there's a bunch of rooms. And some of those rooms are people who hate me. So I have to walk in those rooms every now and then, open that door and sit down with that woman who's smoking a cigarette going, "Who the fuck do you think you are?" You know, and work with that part of me and have her become a hero and help me in my everyday life rather than, because I can't change you. I can guide you.
With gentle nagging over years, you can change your husband.
Well, you know, one thing I've actually started doing in my job mentoring people is I stopped trying to tell people what to do.
Right.
And I started asking for them to tell me what to do. And when I positioned it in that way, like that they're having to teach me, all kinds of changes happen in their brains, you know?
Right. The best words that I've been using that I learned from Brene Brown. I don't know if you haven't read those books yet. Run, don't walk.
I'll Google it.
Go gurgle. Watch her TED Talks. Mm-hmm. When she finds somebody that she doesn't agree with, or they say something that she just, it just grinds her. She says, tell me more. Tell me more. Tell me more about that.
Because you want to get people in a teaching position.
And then she can start understanding where that person's coming from and then look a little deeper. What happened to this person that they absolutely love Trump? Ugh. You know, what happened to that baby? What happened to Trump when he was a child? You start to empathize with those people a little bit more by saying, tell me more.
Mm-hmm. So, you get them to express themselves. Then oftentimes you can, and when you repeat back to them, what they're saying to you, they realize how stupid they are.
Right. And then the aspect of capitalism you're talking about, you know, ask that person who you're trying to sell that item. Tell me more about that. What would you like to wear? You know, that's the same thing. You're in sales, you said?
I don't talk about that job.
You don't talk about that job?
I can sell an Eskimo snow.
Right.
I can call an operator. As Grace Jones says. And part of it is like, I'm a persuasive person because I can, if I'm excited about something, you know, and also like, you know, Mark will say, those like, I only want to do work that I'm excited and passionate about. Mm-hmm. because I understand deeply what I wanted to do since I was a child, you know, and I had a wonderful family and a wonderful community that celebrated who I was to some degree. You know, when I came out as gay, it was a little pebbles, but it weren't, you know, it wasn't to the degree that other people had. You know, when I was 10 years old, my sisters and I just started a lemonade stand in the front of our house in San Juan, Puerto Rico. And instead of my father being like, "What the hell are your kids doing there? You know, you're giving away food for free." No, he thought it was hilarious and started taking pictures of it.
Aww.
And to the point that he was like, thought it was a delight. He was delighted in our weirdness.
That's amazing.
And he would show that off to his, and part of it is, I think, you know, my father was first marriage was with his very conservative Jehovah's Witness cousin. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how we do in the old world. And he had all these children who grew up to be relatively conservative themselves. And so when they come, you know, to town, my father would be like, "My children know how to play piano and dance and they can perform and do puppet shows and stuff like that, you know." And he would show that off to them and to their horrors. Yeah. You know, they did not accept us. They were horrified. And he's like, "What do you know? Get the fuck out of my home."
But then you go the other way where all the other all our brothers and sisters out there who had no parents or got kicked out of their homes and didn't have that wonderful experience. That's where that narrative of negativity, you know, starts in your head. And you have to take that journey of understanding, is this real? Is this voice in my head that says I'm not good enough real? And I don't think it is. I think it's a protective mechanism that we just need to fully understand. Mm. And that's what that book gave me. It gave me an aspect.
You're talking
Back to the Velvet Rage. Yeah.
Well, it's about living, knowing your authentic self and dealing with yourself authentically instead of going for the car, going for like the, you know, the 10 load evening. That kind of thing, and the best job. Instead of striving for all those kinds of things, you strive for the things that really, truly have meaning to you, right?
Yeah.
But don't you guys get a little bit sick pleasure in seeing like these, Fortune 500 CEOs in Velvet Rage showing how miserable they are? It's
that is probably part of the appeal of the book. That's good.
Yeah.
Jacqueline Suzanne, her book, what was it? Valley of the Dolls.
Yeah.
And she's like, that's part of the reason why people loved my book is because they saw people who had it all really, really suffer. And for somebody, you know, your average housewife, your person riding the subway, it's a great story because you're just like, look, these people are just so fucked up too. It does make you feel better about your own life. And reading this and hearing about Enrique, who had to buy it, you know, 5 jets just so he could orgasm,
villas in Monaco,
kind of made me feel like, well, I guess my life isn't so bad.
I would like to have those kind of problems, though. I'm just saying for the record, you know, and part of it is like, and this is why it's problematic, because in order to have concentrated wealth, somebody else doesn't have that wealth. You know, love is infinite, but money isn't. And when somebody is getting really, really rich, that means somebody else isn't at their expense. Yeah. And that's, you know, one thing that I don't think class issues, I don't think race, I don't think gender inequalities is brought into Velvet Rage and into that intersection. Mm-hmm. But it's okay because we can take the good things from Velvet Rage and transcend it, go one step forward and create a liberation philosophy, whatever psychology, where we actually work for everybody's well-being.
Right. And I wonder if he's ever going to do like a third or fourth edition where he addresses...
I'm not interested in what Alan Downs has to say about it, to be honest.
No, why not?
Because I think he's had plenty of time to include that. And I think he's, you know, in my opinion, I think he's too much of an elitist and too much of a snob.
But
to really give a fuck about what people of color are struggling with in this country.
Don't people change?
I would love to see. Mm-hmm. I want to create a space and environment to encourage and not shame others into growth. But at the same time, you can remove them off the board of directors and then have somebody else be right.
Yeah, the way this is written, say the name of your friend from New York who was on.
Damon L. Jacobs.
Oh, my God. He was so great. Hey, his points were spot on.
What were his points again? It was...
he talked about the little bit of the toxic masculinity, how Alan Downs downplayed femininity. Mm-hmm. I mean, just those aspects of gay culture that are there and he ignored. Mm-hmm. And like monogamy is the only thing, you know, come on, give me a good foursome. Mm-hmm. I could be in a polyamorous relationship in a second. But yeah, so he did skip a few things, but I think, you know, he was coming, how many years ago was this written?
The you know, early 2006 or something
and,
like that.
And how long before that was he researching it? So this was a long time.
It may have gone back a little bit further because I read an interview with James Baldwin, great African-American thinker, queer man, and they asked him, and I thought he was almost speaking about exactly this Velvet Rage for white people specifically. The interviewer asked him, do black people have the same sense of being gay as white gay people do? I mean, I feel distinct from other white people. And James responded, well, I think it is because you are penalized, as it were, unjustly. You're placed outside a certain safety to which you think you are born. And that's kind of what the Black Velvet Rage is, right?
Right.
A black person who is a sexual conundrum to a society is already, long before the question of sexuality comes into it, menaced and marked because he's black or she's black. The sexual question comes after the question of color. It's simply one more aspect of the danger in which all black people live. I think white gay people feel cheated because they were born in principle into a society in which they were supposed to be safe. The anomaly of their sexuality puts them in danger unexpectedly. The reaction seems to me in direct proportion to the sense of feeling cheated of the advantages which accrue to white people in a white society. There's an element, it has always seemed to me, of bewilderment and complaint. Now, that may sound very harsh, but the gay world as such is no more prepared to accept black people than anywhere else in society. It's a very hermetically sealed world with very unattractive features, including racism. You know, and so it's what was I going to say? So you see, he's kind of tapping into that idea of Velvet Rage there, what white people go through.
Right.
Now, I think a lot has changed since he said this in the late 80s. And if you look at interracial relationships, you're more likely to be a gay person in an interracial relationship than if you were straight. So more queer people are with people of different races than white people are.
So are you saying that as LGBTQ people were more willing to be in a mixed race relationship, yes, regardless mm-hmm. of whether we're more interested in equality mm-hmm. or we're more equitable towards mm-hmm. each other? Are we more or less racist? Mm-hmm. You know, that's a different mm-hmm. meter. But I think in terms of our willingness to go into partnerships, mm-hmm. into weddings, into long-term relationships, we're number one in that type mm-hmm. of space.
Right. But I like how James, he mentions, it's like, you know, black people experience the same kind of thing, but, you know, the question of color always comes first. So, like, because they're always a person that's not going to necessarily get what they want or be treated a certain way, the sexuality comes as, like, a second. So I can see why this book appeals more towards a white person than to a person of color.
Exactly.
And I think there's mm-hmm. something to be said here too, in terms of the rage of a man. There is an expectation of sex and the way we treat each other when we're seeking that sex. You know, everybody who's listening to the show who has experiences on hookup apps has experienced
what are those?
The anger and the tantrums mm-hmm. of somebody who is mad because you're not interested in having sex with them.
Or you're right. not even responding to their advances. It was like, mm-hmm. hello, hello, hello.
Yep.
Block.
I showed you my butthole. Please respond.
And part of that, I think, is tied to rape culture. It's tied to you know, to be, even if you're not a sexual perpetrator, if you're not a rapist, you are a man and you live in this society that harms people who aren't men. You know, and it harms men as well, you know, and it's like, and we need to be fighting against that and address that. In order to become self-actualized, Velvet Rage, we need to understand how rape perpetuates itself in their society and how to fight that. And that, and until we do that, we cannot be self-actualized gay men. We cannot be happy and healthy.
Well, that invalidation is a very, soon as something on those apps, if you say one thing to someone that they don't like, there's the block, that's the rage.
My response to them is like, honey, take it up with customer service. Cause I'm just a human, you know, part of it is like, I think people sometimes treat you as if as you're a product on a shelf.
Right, yeah.
I one time had this Republican that I used to work with. He was the owner of a big company that I was working for. And he, every single day, he'd come into my office. This is my boss, you know. He'd be like, Fausto, where can I find love? And I was like, well, maybe you're looking in the wrong places. What is it that you want? What kind of relationship do you want? Relationship was the key word here. His response was like, I want a 21-year-old white male who wears the baseball cap, who is Republican, and likes to go to baseball games and drink with me. And I'm just like, what? The only word drink with is the only part of the relationship. Everything else was like, you might as well be pulling things out of a vending machine or a Russian bride catalog, you know? And I think, you know, it is interesting to see like Donald Trump, the misery that he has with his mail order bride, Melania Trump, is because he on a superficial level is looking at, you know, boobs, check.
A trophy.
White, check. You know, pretty face, plastic surgery, check. And not about like who she is as a person, because Donald Trump doesn't understand who he is.
He doesn't know what, I mean, when someone says, why can't I find love? Yeah. I say, well, tell me what love means to you, you know, define love. What type of love do you want?
And you know what Coco Peru said to me? It's like, may all your dreams come true. Unless your dreams are shitty, then I hope they never come true.
That's nice.
And part of it is like, you know, if you ask somebody what love is, they're going to give you a very Valentine's Day Hallmark card, superficial, trite answer.
Yeah. Well, and so when I tried to answer that question, it was trite. And the next book that came after this was The Five Love Languages by, it's going to come, Michael Singer, but there's a type of, we all identify with a different type of love, and you can take this test online. And mine is physical touch, quality time. I spending time with you guys and touching your bicep a little bit earlier. Aww. Oh, just fed
me. I'm happy.
Yeah.
it's verklempt.
Everybody leans to a certain type of love. And if a person like you guys probably do it, you've been together how many years?
20.
You're probably feeding each other's love language and you don't even know you're doing it. You look at those couples that don't do it, and if they're not, then you need to ask for it.
Mm-hmm.
And
when Mark is in the room, I'm like a kid jumping on the bed.
And is he yelling at you or jumping with you?
No, I don't know. For me, it's like Mark's just there. Either you can be on jumping on the bed or telling me to get off the bed or whatever, but it's I'm so excited to be around Mark that I'm ecstatic every moment of the day.
So quality time. You love spending time with him.
Absolutely. So I can't get enough. I'm a junkie.
So when he's not paying attention to you, he's on his phone or reading a book and you're trying to get attention,
you got me there.
Right. Okay. So
I'll be like, bitch. Right.
So you're totally of quality time.
I think one of my favorite things about Foster is one time we were driving down Lakeshore Drive and, you know, I'm driving and then he takes my other hand and he's just like, he's holding it in my hand and he's kissing it and he's telling me how much he loves me. And then the people in the car next to us knew it, like saw us. Aww. They knew us. And they're like, oh my God.
Oh, so it was actually friends of ours were in the car. They were spying on us and not realizing.
And you didn't know it.
Because sometimes I think,
I think some people think we, Faust and I, have some kind of fake relationship.
Well, part of it is that, you know, this is the thing. It's like Mark and I have observed that, especially in like young love, if you're on social media, be like, I love my little whoopee poo, you know, on as your status update, that relationship is doomed.
Yeah, you're doomed.
Really?
Always. Uh-huh. If it's the first, like in the first month or six months and be like, this is the man of my dreams and I just love him. You're like,
I found
countdown.
Don't advertise your love.
You know, and they've actually done studies that say like the more you profess like your love and stuff for somebody online is like the less secure you are about that relationship.
And I think the longer you're together, you have to do it. Touch up. I mean, you have to go talk to something, read a book, find and talk to each other about the things.
Read a book and figure out how to love me better.
Listen, Mark and I would profoundly benefit from counseling and working on our relationship and working on our interviewing skills and working on all kinds of like interpersonal psychological struggles that we face.
Everybody.
And we're doing this best we can. And part of it is, you know, doing these shows is a sneaky way of us getting free therapy.
Totally. Totally.
Although part of it is too, I do want to encourage other people that to be a teacher in their community and to the people that you know is a great way to learn, as long as you're not being dogmatic and willing to negotiate.
Sure. And yeah. Unlearn some things that you've learned. I'm constantly, I learned this as a kid. That's not true. Mm. You know, I'm really looking at some of that right now. There's a book, Unlearn, something the poet, I can't remember right now. You know, all these things that we were.
Emily Dickinson.
I
love. I never saw that movie.
I want to see that movie.
Did that ever come to town?
It did. Oh, God, so many good movies. Listen, people, forget about everything. Go see Pose. Swear to God, Pose
or
is
six.
The,
I want to see
start
six.
Watching it.
Pose.
Category
ten,
is
ten. Yes,
Velvet Rain.
It's the, one of the best things. What do you think about and you know, the artist way talks about procrastination as an addiction.
Oh yeah.
And one of the best ways to, and I've noticed this with myself, like times that I've wanted to act out in harmful behavior, the thing that makes me make better choices is being around people and being able to help others. And in terms of automatic writing, is one thing that they recommend is just, you know, at the beginning of the day, spend 10 minutes just writing in your journal, and don't type because the writing is slower.
Mm-hmm.
And just putting your thoughts into paper so they don't.
Do you do that every morning?
I don't do that at all.
Do you have a practice that you
but
do?
But I used to what in the
doing?
Past.
When you get up in the morning, what do you do? What's the first thing you do?
Go back to sleep.
He gets up, goes to the bathroom, goes back to sleep. Or he comes over here and sits at the computer, or he'll make. He's on a French toast kick these
Ooh.
Days.
Oh, so I do. Foster I could do that.
Foster does breakfast, and he does the same breakfast for about 6 months to a year, and then it changes,
like Elvis.
And then changes to something else for another 6 months to a year, and now it's been French toast recently.
Oh, I do love my French toast.
Oh, that sounds beautiful. Yeah, I'll come over in the morning.
Yes, okay.
Come over tomorrow morning. He'll be making French toast, banana, yogurt.
I do like tacos with bacon and a
while you're tacos. Making the French toast.
Yes.
Is there something going on in your head?
Well, this is one thing that I started doing, and I've been doing this for about 3 years now, is breathing uninterrupted without any distractions for at least a minute to 5 minutes.
Good.
And I sometimes do this hanging upside down, and it's extremely helpful in clearing my mind, but also in just helping my back and helping my outlook on life.
I'm one of those aversion tables?
Yeah, okay. It's really fantastic. And okay. I'm just a huge fan of it. And I know so many people with sciatica or lower back pain, mm-hmm. and I just beg them, just try that. And, you know,
it doesn't work for everybody, but for some people, it really works.
And you can present this information, you know, and I know that the people listening to this podcast are just like, what a bunch of crazy
we're
gay
all
guys
over the place.
Screaming all over. But part of it is like, I want to start people having a conversation about this stuff. And we want to hear from you guys on social media or through email, whatever way you enjoy communicating, how you overcome the selfishness epidemic that we face, how you cultivate a sense of well-being and self-care by
exactly.
fighting consumption.
And the first thing I do in the morning, I name five things I'm grateful for. Oh. And then I it can be the same thing a few days in a row. And I try to write those down. And so it'll be like, I'm grateful for you guys. This is to have this platform to talk.
I'm grateful for you.
It's amazing.
But isn't that what we used to do as kids when we used to pray to Santa or Jesus or whatever, is that we would be like reflecting on the people in our lives.
Absolutely.
And just how much we're joyful for that.
Count
your blessings. And instead of, you know, oh, I got to go to work, or the weather's so shitty, you know, then you're setting a tone for your day.
Yeah. The weather has been pretty shitty, though.
But what can you do about it?
I love rainy weather. There
is nothing we can do about the weather. So choose to be happy.
Yeah.
So I put that intent.
Some people choose
in my
to
body.
Live Southern California.
Right. You know, and then they complain about the heat or the fires or
the traffic. Yeah. Boy, I'll take Chicago weather over, you know, LA traffic. Yeah. Just saying. But I wouldn't listen. If I had LA money to live in LA, I'd love to live in LA, but
right. just that aspect of positivity. I'm trying to enter it into my body right away when I get up. And then I, you know, plan my day, and sometimes it goes bad, but things are always going to go bad for us. There's more bad in our future. How do you want to go through it?
Thanks for reminding me. You're welcome.
It's going to happen.
It's coming.
Are we going to be? These are the good days.
Right.
Are we going to be miserable about it, or are we going to have more tools in our toolbox to handle that situation in a better way than we did in the past? That's what I'm looking for. You know, the next time I get, you know, I fall in love with somebody and then they cheat on me or they break up with me. And then I feel like the way I felt with my ex-partner, am I going to revert to all my bull crap that I had before? Or can I just say, well, you know, here I go again and handle it in a better way and then go, hey, I need you guys to hug me. You know, I know I have better tools now. And that's what that book gave me and these other books gave me. Mm-hmm. And I know how to feed my next partner's love languages so he doesn't go away. Mm. Or my next four partners.
All of them. Don't starve your partners.
And one of the probably most important things that, and I'm back to Pose, the greatest television show of all time, is how those people survived.
Right. How resilient they were.
They were only resilient because they got out of their selfishness and they got together and did these shows where they were able to transcend the world that they lived in and became a queen, a prince, a rich businessman, a star, you know, and for a few moments on stage when they're walking the runway, they got to be anything they wanted to be.
And that's what all the beautiful people listening to your podcast should know, that you can do it too.
But it only happened because they chose to get out of the house and spend face time with their community. And with any of that, you have a bunch of anti-vaxxers, flat earthers, Trumpsters, you know, with a weak culture, you have a weak society.
Yeah.
And the reason that we're in the boat that we're in today is because people do not spend time face to face with each other.
Right.
Voguing and sashaying and slicing each other on the runway with vicious language. Oh, I noticed that you're wearing your favorite lip balm, sperm.
You have to support your community. And one community you can support is the Feast of Fun community. We create this podcast so we can talk to wonderful people like Mark Saltzman about ideas like this that hopefully, you know, can enrich your life, change your life for the better. And we can do it without your support. The best way to support the podcast is to become a Plus member, and you can do that at feastoffun.com/plus.
Or enter a world of fun and enter some of our specially curated goodies and watch Cooking with Drag Queens before everyone else gets to see it. Go to CookingWithDragQueens.com, or it's on Patreon, patreon.com/feastoffun. Mark Saltzman,
you guys are awesome.
Of the earth.
I was just going to say, we have a new episode of Cooking with Drag Queens.
We do.
Yes. Show's not over yet. I just wanted to get that plug in.
Who is it?
We have a Cooking with Drag Queens episode with Erica Clash. You might know her from season 2 of Dragula, where she got whipped, beaten, bitten, stabbed. Could she survive Feast of Fun and Cooking with Drag Queens?
Erica, Aviance, Couture, Extravaganza, Little Miss Strawberry, Clash.
And we made them really delicious. They were a homemade ice cream. We made it super fast with dry ice, but we also made donut ice cream cones, and we dressed them up to look like little kitty cats.
Oh, cute.
Meow. They're so adorable.
It made my pussy wet and my tongue lap up all that cream.
I did some whipping this weekend, too.
You did?
I did.
With what? Oh,
big
whips.
Yeah, big whips. And
I like more whipped cream than leather whips. But, you know, that's me.
That's why there's all the colors in the rainbow again.
That's right.
We're all into something, people.
Mark Saltzman is available to get yourself together, to be your magic gay man, to guide you through the underworld of this tortured modern world we live in.
Yeah, find me on Facebook if anybody wants to talk, or you know there's, I lived in a little itty bitty town in Lake George, Michigan, and I know there's lots of other people out there who are struggling with the same thing. I don't fit in.
Where the hell is Lake George?
Hold your hand up and point right to the middle of it.
Okay.
That's Lake George, Michigan.
Right there. Right.
You mean where these that giant scar in the middle of my left hand?
Did you live there with your mom?
Look at those calluses from lifting all those weights.
No, look at that scar in the middle of my hand.
Oh, that's right. You told me about that when you
stabbed. I stabbed an avocado and it stabbed myself.
Yes, my mother.
Is she in Lake George?
She's in Lake George right now.
Your pot smoking.
She's
mom?
Probably smoking a joint right now.
Whatever happened with that? She got arrested for smoking pot.
Oh, the pot smoking grandma. She was in the news. Mark Saltzman's mom is the pot smoking grandma.
Her movie. Long
story. They're working on a movie now.
We have a full documentary of the event that happened. Mom's medical marijuana card expired. My great niece lost her phone and debit card in another neighboring county. Mm-hmm. That police sent it to the local county. Her last address was she was living with my mother for a bit. They sent a police officer out. The police officer knocks on the door.
To drop off the card?
To do a welfare check.
Okay.
Because they, you know, there's so many young girls being abducted nowadays. And so they were going to see if my niece was okay. So when she walked up to the door, she smelled the marijuana and said, "I smell marijuana. Is that your granddaughter smoking? Is your son here? Who's smoking the pot?" My mom's like, "I'm smoking it. I use it from medicinally." Mm-hmm. And the cop would not believe her. And my mother is the most honest person. She's like, "Well, come the hell in and look around if you want to."
And big mistake.
And that is a big mistake.
White person's mistake.
Because your mom's high.
She's high. And she
was black. She was
she's
not slammed
kind,
the door.
And she's trusting, and she let the police officer in. Shit. And then this woman arrested my 80-year-old mother, took her to jail overnight.
And were they nice to her, or did they pull out the hose on her?
No, they were. They used their training. So the thing that both
did a cavity search on your mom.
They made her sleep on the floor with a small yoga mat, a very thin yoga mat. This is 80 years old. They took her coat. So she had some thin clothing on because she didn't think about what should I wear something warm? Mm. And it was 60 degrees. They keep jail cells 60 degrees. And this is 80 years old with a ton of medical problems. So the judge threw it out completely. But the prosecutor wanted to keep pushing it forward. So that's when I got pissed and I started calling news. I called a few news agencies and radio stations, and my mother did 16 different radio interviews, a number of print interviews, and then,
all stoned out of her mind
a little bit. Well, she doesn't, the medicinal stuff kind of calms her down and gives her energy. She doesn't seem when she was younger and she's Canadian Indian too. Come on. She smoked some ganja for a while, but wonderful woman who now this movie, the Coalition to Regulate Marijuana Like Alcohol in Michigan, this bill just passed last November. They did a whole documentary on the whole episode, and that movie is being shown in 6 different states right now to start to legalize recreational marijuana so that no one else has to go through what my mom did.
Yeah.
It is a real crime in this country that the one drug that is the least harmful to your body is the one that for a long time has been one of the most prosecuted, and
it's all about money and power.
Prohibited is marijuana.
Money and power. And who do they go after? People of color and poor people.
Well, and Nixon pretty clearly spelled that out, that he was not really interested in whether people did drugs or not. He was interested in compromising progressive people in the United States because he felt it was in his way of his political corruption. And so the drug war was started by Nixon in order to compromise the Black Panther movement, civil rights, workers' rights, and so on.
And Anslinger before him, because Anslinger, after Prohibition was repealed, he lost his funding. So he had to find a way to keep money. So he demonized the Mexicans. And there was all this propaganda in the newspaper of Mexicans with sombreros and bandoliers and smoking pot and how they were going to rob you. And so that's where
what's changed.
Yeah.
Right. Even though like the song La Cucaracha.
Is that about marijuana?
The original lyrics
has some marijuana in it, right?
La cucaracha ya no puede caminar porque no tiene, porque le falta marihuana pa fumar.
Really?
So sing that in English for people.
The little cockroach cannot even walk because it's missing marijuana to smoke.
Wow.
Yeah,
it's kind of awkward.
It's awkward.
It's a lovely song, and as kids we were laughing about it. My mother was like, sing the nice version.
But just people with HIV and AIDS, you know, when that gives them an appetite. There's so many people with medical conditions that marijuana helps, and we know it's been proven. They just have to figure out how we're going to make money off it, and how they have been making money off it is to put people in jail and leave them there.
That's right, baby.
And that shit needs to stop.
Smoke it if you got them. Liberate your mind. Liberate your life by using love.
But love yourself.
Was there any was there any truth to the rumor that somebody got arrested for having sex in the bathroom at the hotel?
Yes,
at IML.
Absolutely.
Somebody did get arrested.
Yes, they were removed from the hotel. I don't know if they went to jail, but I'm.
With all that crazy shenanigans happening around, that's the one they got.
Public.
There was somebody being vacuum formed with their dick,
But that was in a private area. That was in the upstairs in the area where you needed a wristband, not in the bathroom. I mean,
the lobby.
In the.
God, I've seen so many crazy things happen in there. It's like, I don't know. Part of me is like, listen, the only rule is that there aren't any rules except consent.
Well, I never want to yuck someone else's yum. Whatever you want to do, go for it. But there is limits to that. You can't have sex in a public bathroom where there's going to be other straight people or, people who don't want to see that. Or, it's not a free-for-all.
Joan Crawford when you need her at IML be like, I paid for this hotel, and you're going to look the other way. Now, thank you very much.
And upstairs, in the Leather Mart, I saw two of the porn stars having sex.
I was walking down the hallway and there was two people like just having sex doggy style right there. I was like,
in the hallway or in their room?
In the hallway. Right there in the hallway.
See, again, you're asking for it.
And people said that the people were kind of making a big deal saying that Jackhammer was raided.
Really?
Too, but it wasn't really raided. The cops came in. I guess people had reported them for being over capacity. And here in Chicago, they take that kind of stuff
very seriously.
Yeah. Because especially with that E2 nightclub disaster, they had that stampede. 21 people died, 45 people were injured. You want to really respect those fire code laws.
Yeah.
And some of these places really climbing it. Now, another Boys Town place is a lot of people are mad because they just implemented a no rap policy to their bar. No rap.
Like rap music?
No rap music. So, I guess they put some kind of I think it was.
Fergie, you are banned.
I mean, is that a private message? Is that a DM?
That looks like a private message or something.
Or is that a Facebook from Facebook Messenger?
This is gossip that's being spread around the internet. It may not be real.
Yeah. It may not be real. We'll see.
You need to fact check that.
We'll fact check. Do you want me to read it for you, though?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. We are changing up our format. Our goal is to promote a positive, happy, energetic, upbeat, and most importantly, a fun vibe. Fun, all in capitals.
Oh, jeez.
Think DJ AM for 2019, a super open format, pop, dance-focused atmosphere. We have implemented a no-rap rule effective immediately.
This
is not a suggestion. If you play rap, you will not be asked back. Anything vulgar, aggressive, or considered mumble rap, including certain Cardi B tracks and newer Nicki Minaj, is off-limits.
We don't want no Banji girls here.
If you are unsure if a song qualifies, assume it does and choose something else. Think Kiss FM B96 opposed to WGCI.
Is this a message to DJs?
I think it is.
Oh, that's hilarious.
If someone is pressuring you for a song, just let them know it's the new rule. There will be added security there to help with the transaction and one specifically posted next to the DJ booth. Part of me is just kind of like, it just seems so outrageous. Like, how could in this day and age something like
that even be
happen?
True? Right.
Especially because drag is so ubiquitous. But there is Boys Town has always had a certain element of racism, and I hope that this is part of me is hoping that this is some kind of joke, but.
Stop the music, stop the music. I wanted Banji girls, not, what did they say? Not prison.
That sounds a little racist.
Pose.
Yeah. And I guess there was another update too of something else posted this. They said they were out in Boys Town. A fight started at Progress Bar in Chicago. After the fact, everyone was like, the black guy was the aggressor and pushed the white guy through the window. In reality, it was like the exact opposite. And so it was, that's what's going on there. So I think that they're just, there was some kind of incident where the window was broken and they're going to blame the black people for it.
It's just happening so much more with our political system right
Billy
now.
Billy Porter, where are you? We need you in Chicago.
You know? We Meanwhile, need Blanca to sit at that bar.
We need, listen, we're having a Black Pride celebration. Everybody's invited. Mm-hmm. That's coming real soon. June is just around the corner. Lots if anybody wants to come join us.
That's who you should have on. Derek Morrow. Do you know Derek?
We've had him a million times.
Have you had here? He is such an amazing man.
He's not here. You are here right now.
Oh, yes. I love him.
Red Bull presents Renaissance One at the Promontory. Honey, it's going to be lots of flavor. And I'll be attending. It's only $10 to get in.
Yeah.
I'm going.
I think we're on the VIP list.
So we are.
We might be able to bring a couple of people along with us.
Who would like to come?
Explain that again. What is that?
There's always a list, and I want to get into the party, and the party is Black Pride.
What Black Pride, okay.
Of Black and Pride.
Well, is it called Black Pride? It's Red Bull Presents.
People are treating it as Black Pride.
It's all like, rappers and DJs and stuff like that.
But it's targeted to African Americans.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And their friends and their communities.
Where and when?
That's going to be June 27th, Thursday at 8 p.m.
Lovely.
I have to take the night off work.
Ooh.
Party!
Yeah.
Mark Saltzman, it's a pleasure talking to you. We have to wrap this up before my husband puts more people on blast.
I just have to listen, when injustice happens, you have to speak out about it.
And some
people, you know, they wonder, it's like, what is the role of Feast of Fun in the community? It's to interview people like you, but it is also to... you let the powers that be know that they ain't so powerful.
First they came for the booger queens and no one spoke. Then they came for the banjee girls and no one spoke. And then they came after me and there was no bougie or banjee girls or booger queens to speak for me.
What about the camp girls?
They were still... talking.
Hey, go to feastoffun.com/store and get yourself a Pride t-shirt. There's something there you'll like.
Store, honey. Mark Saltzman.
Bye.
We love you. Peace out.
Bye.
Peace.